Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that Inspires Thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. For the past 3.5 years since the beginning of COVID, and now even that we're out and about, SPIRIT continues to be the safest and ideal way for everyone to get together and learn in a virtual setting. Here we are now, in our whole Yuntif month, where we're getting together with families and all sorts of things are going on. And sometimes we find it challenging to just interact with those who are closest to us, whether it's our family at the Yuntif table, whether it's people in shul, whether we're grocery shopping. Today's program is going to give you some strategies on how to navigate these issues. It is my pleasure and my honor to introduce Deborah Laufer, Esquire, who will be talking to us just about these issues on family. We called the program Family Feud to Relationship Rapport. And it's my pleasure and honor to turn the Spirit Forum over to Deborah Laufer. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be able to speak to you today on this issue. It is not an easy one to speak about, and particularly over the holidays, it seems that our emotions are, we wear them on our sleeve. We bring them to the fore in our prayers, when we daven, and we are certainly very, very sensitive when we're trying to engage with family, friends, and congregants. So it is a constant challenge. How do we balance our connections? How do we strike the right note, hit the right chord, try to bring ourselves closer as opposed to continuing to drift? Because drifting might be our easier mode. It's so easy to drift. Send a text instead of making a phone call, inviting people over and bringing ourselves closer. And that's because every single interaction is laden with emotion. A while ago, after returning from a very long visit in Israel with my family, with my daughter who had made Aliyah, I found a note that my husband had attached to the inside of our front door. And it said, "Don't procrastinate, panic now." I was startled that I looked at it. And he said that it was from a quote that he had seen recently. I began to think about it, and it reminded me of an old Jewish joke, which had been described as a telegram, originally perhaps from the Borscht Belt or otherwise. And it was the following: start worrying, details to follow. I'm sure you've heard of it or versions of that. We take this idea in our lives, and it's not because things aren't difficult that we don't worry. We worry all the time about things. Are we doing the right thing? Are we setting the right tone? Are we putting our foot in it? How are we dealing with our families? How are we dealing with our friends? And things seem to have gotten more fraught. And there seem to me more, I would say, levels of difference. And how do we cut through it? And I would suggest it's by finding the levels of sameness and the levels of the things that we share. And finding the things that we share is how we are going to reconnect. So I'm going to now share my screen with some PowerPoints that I have developed, and we'll find perhaps some tools to go forward and deal with the highly emotional ways that we navigate life and find some ways to navigate our relationships over the holidays. Okay. Let's see. Let me just share this. Hold on. One second. Okay, so we saw this, my husband's great don't procrastinate, panic now, or as you had seen, the alternative, start worrying, details to follow. As we know, disputes happen. In fact, they happen extremely regularly for all sorts of reasons. And that is because we negotiate with ourselves, we negotiate with others all the time. This depends on making decisions. What are we going to wear? What are we going to eat for dinner? How are we going to navigate? Which way to drive to the supermarket? And the Jewish people seem to know this instinctively. Disputes are all through the Torah, they're all through the Mishnah, they're all through the Talmud. And we have role models of the Aaron HaKohen, who is the high priest. He was known as Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom, one who loved peace and pursued peace. However, he didn't leave us a roadmap as to how to navigate those skills, which he was known for. So one of the ways to deal with conflict and to deal with disputes and to deal with the negotiation of life is to confirm with yourself and to others is that this is an ordinary part of life. We always deal with negotiation. It's a regular phenomenon. We're always dealing with it. We're going to be dealing with it always. And that allows you room to understand that there's going to be different perspectives. And to just say, yes, you might have a different understanding of what you want for dinner, a different way of looking at politics, a different way of dealing with what you're going to be doing with your time. That's okay. It's a kind of, I'm okay, you're okay. And we're not used to always doing that. We've been in our own me kind of space for a very, very long time. And we have to start navigating the growing pains that a lot of people are doing in shuls, in communities, in families, of being more in an us, we kind of space. And that's very difficult. So one of the ways we do that is finding what's the difference between the position of what people are saying and the why, the underlying interest, which is the why of why they're saying it. When somebody says a position, taking a position, I want this, you have to understand why underlying it, they're saying it. And that's really hard. So for instance, the metaphor of conflicts, of disputes, is for instance, the iceberg. And the iceberg is what you see over the water. It's just the tip. And you have to think, what lies underneath? What are the needs? Why are they saying it? Why are they so committed to their position? What lies underneath? So for instance, it's very, very challenging for you sometimes to uncover that. But when you do, it's a breakthrough moment. And then you could come together. So one of the things we're going to do now is I'm going to explain to you a little bit of why we get so defensive about our positions and so hard to find those breakthrough moments. Let's take a perhaps a little bit of a typical role play or circumstance that you might find. Somebody, a mother-in-law, for instance, calls up a daughter-in-law. Hello, Chumi. We'd like you, David, and the children to come for the last days of Sukkot, but we have some rules we'd like to institute. The last visit didn't go very well, if you know what I mean, and Dad was extremely upset. I want none of it this time. What's your reaction to that kind of opening lines when the mother-in-law calls the dear daughter-in-law? She thinks she's being so welcoming to her daughter-in-law. She wants the family to come. She already is thinking she's going to control the situation with the kids, with her son, with the daughter-in-law. She's trying to protect her husband. But what has she created? A situation of extreme tension and defensiveness and emotional barricades between perhaps one camp and the other camp. How can we break it down? I suggest, and this is not an original thought, this is one by many people, including Folger, Shapiro, and others, that you address core concerns in different ways. And some of those core concerns are appreciation, affiliation, autonomy, status, and role. Let's look at these in this little vignette and think how we can analyze it and look at it and apply it also in our own relationships, the ones that matter most to us. These core concerns, again, appreciation, affiliation, autonomy, status, and role, which I will define, give us a lens to understand the emotional experience of us and those around us, and also provide a lever to stimulate more positive experiences and emotions in ourselves and others. Let's look at these, both defining them and their impacts. So let's look. And through the OU and the Spirit program, you can get these slides afterwards to look at these more carefully. And you could certainly contact me to discuss them. One of the core concerns that I mentioned was appreciation. What is appreciation? I'm not giving you a Webster or a Collins or one of the many, many wonderful definitions that's out there in the dictionary. I'm giving you what's a heartfelt definition: to value, respect, and see merit in what the other person thinks, feels, and does. looking at families, for instance, grown-up children, each one represents something special to who you have become as a family and who you are as parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. Each person in a community contributes something to who that community is and should be valued for the merit of who they are. Despite a person's age and wealth and authority, a person needs to be felt valued and heard. In that vignette, this person, Humi, the fictional Humi, didn't feel very heard or valued. She felt devalued. How would you rewrite it in your mind if you were reaching out, whether to a child, a in-law child, somebody who you wanted to communicate with and communicate appreciation, value, positivity, and reduce by doing so emotional defensiveness and hostility? Partially through you, by doing so, you would go to the next core concern, and that would help: affiliation. Affiliation is somewhat defined by the Latin, the original Latin, to adopt or receive into a family, into a tribe. We have a strong need for tribal affiliation. There's an important book about the PTSD experienced by Iraqi soldiers who fought in Iraq called Tribe. And I recommend it. It's small, but it's about Marines and others who, once injured and experienced PTSD and recovery, had lost that close affiliation and how hard it was for them to recover, going back to a less structured existence and less affiliation. We have a very, very strong need for belonging. During COVID and the many years in which we were stuck in our houses, we lost a sense of affiliation and connection with our communities and the structural connections. I think we're going through a lot of growing pains to get back to this connectivity and the webs of connection that we had before. And it's hard. It's hard to put the us and we back into that connection. And this is hard. And it's our shul community, our extended families in areas that we don't have family that is close. Our extended families are our friends that made room for us inside their homes and represented for us our replacement families, and were so important to us, and we drifted away from them. How can we drift back into their lives? And this is so, so important. Think about shared experiences that you created a tribe with them, and link back to those shared experiences. Minimize your differences, maximize the links, the communal interests, the connected interests. Emphasize what you have in common. Erase the separateness. The next core concern is autonomy. This means respecting each other's ability to make independent decisions. Going back to the vignette, the mother says to Humi, "It didn't go very well. I don't want it to happen again." What is she not allowing? She's not inviting decision-making and caring and a dialogue and shared development of options with her daughter-in-law and perhaps even the children who might be involved. These are invisible, maybe not usually at the table, stakeholders who are so important to your family. Include them. They are part of how to make memories and positive memories. So autonomy is respecting each other's ability to make independent decisions. You don't have to swallow and accept everybody's decision. You don't have to like how everybody is making their decisions and going their way and doing their thing, but respect them. It is so important. It will create goodwill and develop possibilities for dialogue. And the next one is status. Everybody has status. And there's natural status that they create from social esteem and influence that they have garnered over years and years, and particular status gained through expertise or experience. Consider your children and your grandchildren's particular experience and vis-a-vis perhaps your relative experience. We know that in many, many cultures, ours included, there's deference. For you as elders, rabbanim, teachers, and others. And there's great cultural shift that we perhaps find it extremely hard to understand and to navigate very, very often between generations. However, if we balance and then navigate and narrow the differences of status between that which is relative status and particular status, we can regard everybody also, just like with autonomy, great respect. And that also was what was lacking in the conversation on the phone. So to minimize the difference is not to negate your own status. It actually can elevate it, but it creates respect for everybody at the table and creates high standing for everybody. All of this will create emotional balance, emotional positivity for everybody involved. And then lastly, the fifth one is role. We all play different roles and we all have so many different hats in life. But know which role you're in at a particular time when you're speaking and articulate its purpose to yourself and to others. And when roles of others dovetail with you, invite collaboration. Sometimes you have temporary roles, rotating roles, but beware of drama roles. Don't play the victim. Don't play always the rescuer. Don't play the white knight. These are drama roles and they're very, very tricky because you can't always stay in one for very long. These are triangulated roles. To keep these core concerns center and to help you move from a family feud into a relational, wholesome movement into positivity, keep mindfulness into your core. Emotions are always going to be there. But with these five core concerns, you will keep positive emotions running high and be kind to yourself and to others. Be forgiving. You're not always going to say the right thing, others are not always going to respond in the moment correctly, but hopefully more often than not, to the invitation, to the openness, to your willingness, and learn to apologize. Doesn't have to be always the big apology, but it could be sorry so much time has gone by. That goes a long way. Communication is at the core. It's the actual words used, it's the tone, and then we know it's the nonverbal. It's the body language, it's the setting. 7% of communication is the actual words spoken, 38% is the tone, 55% is nonverbal. Listening. Don't just always be preparing what you're going to say, although preparation, it helps. Listening takes effort. The average person speaks about 125 to 250 words per minute, and I've probably been speaking quite a few right now. Make frequent eye contact. Keep yourself oriented toward the speaker. That's called mirroring. Nod your head. Saying things you know. Keep your nonverbal cues open. These are developed early at your knee. You know how you are with your close friends. I'm not going to talk about active listening till I've spoken about reactive listening, because these we know so well. We know what they are because we've seen them and we've been hurt by them. When people interrupt, ignore, assume, call names, minimize what we've said, ask closed questions, yes, no, threaten us, moralize, lecture us, argue with us. Take a look at this. You know what these are because you've been up against all of this. And this is what they're hurtful. They are the things that have closed down the communication, closed down the relationship, and made it difficult to have board meetings, made it difficult to make you call someone, made it even difficult to text. But you know what I want to do over this? Make a big X. You know why? It doesn't matter. You can overcome it. You don't have to. Think about the past. Think about how you want to create a future. This is a time of etratzon, a time of openness, a time of possibility, and you can make the possibilities. Do it. Listen. Active listening. I'm not just going to listen to them and list some of these. I want to give you suggestions. Encouragement is tell me more. Tell me more about your life. Tell me how you'd like us to have a meal together. When would you like us to have a meal together? Tell me what you're doing. Have you seen the kids recently? What's happening in your life? Solicit. I'd like to hear what's happening. Clarify. Yes? What did you do? How did you do it? How did it make you feel? normalize. Yeah, I felt that way too. Empathize. Create a companion emotion when you feel it. Mirror. Summarize. Validate. Then you know why it works. Because it builds trust. It builds the relationships. But it ain't easy. It takes practice. That's why you see that your therapist does it so well. And some people do it more naturally than others. For others, practice it into a recorder, to your best friend, to your significant person, to someone you feel comfortable with. It takes practice. So, what do we do? Where do we go with this? How do we go forward? It's not easy. Let's think about trust. In the past, we did trust. What gets in our own way? What gets into the way of active listening? Well, we have the faker. All the outward signs of a good listener, nodding, eye contact, the occasional aha. However, this person is not in attendance. The interrupter doesn't allow the speaker to finish. Too anxious to speak. Right? Shows little respect for the other point of view. You know, you've gotten all these people to the table, but then you have all these people here. The logical listener, always trying to judge the speaker's words and then trying to fit it into a logical box without figuring out what we said earlier. The why, the underlying interests. The happy hooker uses the speaker's words only to get the message across. Could say anything at all, and the happy hooker steals the focus with that. You know, remember what happened to me, or remember when I was the rebuttal maker. This listener only listens long enough to form a rebuttal. And then this one you see all the time, the advice giver. Well, advice is great to pivot and is sometimes helpful when someone is upset or overwhelmed. One of the best things to do is to ask if someone actually wants advice and to be helped. Or do they just want to be heard? Or maybe they want comfort and it's called to be hugged. This choice gives the speaker a sense of agency. Now, the reason I've listed all of these, it's not just people you've invited to your table. These are very often us, the hosts. We've invited all those innocent guests, all our innocent relatives to our tables, and then we flip on them. We pretend to listen, we interrupt, we hook them with our logic, we rebut their claims, and we give advice. Is that showing anything that we have tried to show them before, that we truly appreciate them to their core? And that we appreciate them, show them affiliation, that they're part of our tribe, that they have autonomy. We realize that we've raised great people, great children. We may not appreciate that they live all the way in Israel, but we understand that they've internalized the messages of Judaism, and they've chosen to live there. that they have status and they have role. Has this really internalized what we've taught them? No. So where's the trust? Think about it. Years ago, we used to share with many keys to our house. Who do you give a key to your house now? Revisit that question. And maybe give a key to your house to someone you trust. Who besides family would you ask to drive you home from a colonoscopy? Who would you ask to drive you to the airport in an emergency? You know someone? Can you call in a jam? Not a family member. You don't live close to them. You have to have people in your life you trust. Start contacting them now. They're important to you. Let them know that they're important to you. They're not important to you because you argue with them. Their opinions don't matter. It's the trust, the memories, their core. When we bench the Chodesh, we say this phrase, Chavirim kol Beit Yisrael. That's a phrase from Sefer Shoftim. A time when there was pretty much chaos. It was before the establishment of kings, before the establishment of rulership in Israel. However, it was at a time when B'nai Yisrael, the nation of Israel, thought as one and acted as one. And that is why this phrase is incorporated when we say the prayer for Rosh Chodesh. This is a model and this is an aspiration. And this is what we have to move toward, trust. We're not based on our differences. We're based on things, shades of sameness. And we can devise and think of things that we hold in common and that we hold in our heart. Let's work toward that. Not only this season, but every single day. You can do it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deborah. You gave us a lot to think about. I particularly like the part about the different kinds of listening. I think that that's something we can all relate to among ourselves, that you know how we might not be necessarily listening properly, and certainly with others. So I think you've given us a lot to digest with the fact that you know, we've got, you know, Yom Kippur gatherings and of course sukkahs. So we've got a lot to be together in small sukkahs and everything else. So there's a lot that we can think about and a lot to take home. So I want to thank you so much. Do you have any comments in your chat? Could you look? And if anybody has any questions or comments, just put it in the chat, please.
I don't have any comments yet, but please feel free. Please feel free to ask anything or if you have a particular concern.
Okay, one comment or question came up here. I'm going to edit a little bit because it's rather long, but you'll tell me whether you think that it's something that's appropriate for you to answer here, or maybe this is something really that a social worker needs to be involved with. But okay, so somebody has emailed in that she has a difference with two different daughters-in-law. Okay. One is warm and welcoming and wonderful. And the other one refuses to let her visit. to be with her grandchild, unless the son is there. And she's saying that she doesn't seem to understand it because she's the mother-in-law feels that she's always been very warm and welcoming. And apparently the daughter-in-law distorts and builds negatively. Is there any comment that you could possibly, and then she's being accused of trying to separate them. So this, I think, is one of these things that maybe it needs to be dealt with by a mental health provider.
Not necessarily. I mean, definitely it could help to have someone like that. I think that one of the ways to deal with it is to welcome that family to things that are neutral outside of the home, to welcome that family to things that would be very, very happy occasions that would be, for instance, Chol HaMoed Sukkot is going to be a full week in which there might be, depending on the ages of the children, things that you could do with that family that would be very, very welcoming that you could design together. And this is really an excellent opportunity for brainstorming, giving agency to that family, in which you would be giving them appreciation, affiliation, all those kind of core concerns. It may not work. I'm not saying I don't know all of the flavor that's going on, but this is the kind of thing in which you could say you don't have the tension of maybe on the Yontif, but maybe on the Chol HaMoed to develop something together.
Okay, well, it's always worth that. Those are some great suggestions. If anybody else has any comments, I just want to make a comment that I don't know how many people here were on the live stream yesterday that the OU did regarding singles. There's been a whole study about how single men and women feel within our communities when they come to our homes. And some wonderful comments were made by the panelists. One who had gotten married later in life, another one who still is single. And it's something for us to think about when we encounter people who are not married, who maybe are divorced, different home, maybe having, it looks like maybe there are infertility issues. And the bottom line is less is more. Not to say anything, to treat people just regularly. It's not our, unless somebody, takes you aside to really want to talk to you privately and have suggestions, then of course it certainly could be appropriate to respond. But a lot of people who have awkward or uncomfortable situations feel that they're being judged. So it's something we certainly do not want to bring upon. So I thought some really, really good comments were made yesterday, and I'm sure that this is available on the OU website.
I did get a request to perhaps model the role play that I did through the core concerns and perhaps replay it. And let me see if I could do that. In a more positive way. Judy, I just sent it to you, the request. Could I reenact the scenario using the strategies I presented?
Oh, great idea. Great idea.
Okay, so let me give it a shot. So to review, the strategies are appreciation, affiliation, autonomy, status, and role. So basically, I call up this daughter-in-law and I'm saying to her that I want her to come, but the previous visit didn't go very well. Dad was upset. I want none of it this time was the original spiel. So this time I would say, Chumi, Dad and I very, very much want you and David and the children to come. How can we develop the most positive experience together? You and David and the children are so precious to us. You add so much to our family. without you, our family, you know, doesn't operate as well as well. You know, I'm just thinking it off the cuff, but basically, what would you think would be some of the best things that we can do? From then, I would say something. I think I would leave it there and see what she would answer. I truly think I would leave it there. I think the less said, the better. I think parents very often say too much and negatively influence that it will be a bad experience and that there were bad experiences in the past. I really do. I think you have to hope for the best. I think you have to leave the question of positivity open. One of my strongest advisors and teachers in dispute resolution and in I think my camera slipped. Is someone named Kenneth Cloke, and he wrote some profound books, and one of them is called The Art of Waking Up People. And while it is for the workplace, it's also I found profound for all building relationships. But he also has written Questions to Improve Communication and Build Relationships. And one of the things he asks is, what is one thing that you haven't communicated with somebody you love that you want to say? And I think about that question very often. Our lives are not infinite. Our time is not forever. What are some things that we think we really should say? And something very, very important also that he writes here is, what do you love or appreciate about the other person, the person in your life, whether it's a loved one, a friend, that you know now and that you didn't know before that you want to tell them? I think this is profound. It's so, so important. He has a whole list of questions. Another one is, what would you most like to ask of someone that you love that you haven't been able to ask yet? So often we think we know our children, our older children, because we've known them as youngsters, but they've moved out of our houses and moved away from the time they've graduated high school. Have we really seen them develop as individuals religiously, emotionally, spiritually since then? Who are they as people? What would you like to ask them? Tell them something about your own journey. Tell them about your story. Ask them about their own stories. Ask them about the touch points of who has made them who they are. And tell them about who you are. In fifth grade, I was trying out for a school play, The Wizard of Oz. And I was given the role of Dorothy. My whole life, I now feel, has been on the goal to find a heart, a brain, and a mind, and to find the ultimate, which is to create a home. Is all our lives sometimes a metaphor for who we are going to be as people? Who knows? But tell your children, tell your friends your story. Tell them who you are. You're not going to have forever, but you have today. I wish everyone a very special Eight Ratzon, a very, very special Good Yontif.
Deborah, thank you. Thank you so much. Before we end today, I just want to mention that Spirit will be going on break for a couple of weeks, and we'll be back, I think it's whatever Tuesday it is, I think it's about a week and a half after Yontif. You'll be certainly getting emails about it. We have a lot of exciting program coming up. Of course, we've already been advertising our multi-session class, not on a Tuesday, it's on a Monday, for postural therapy. So please sign up for that. That's a 5-session course that will be in with the recording you're getting today. And also, I just want to make a request that in this time that everybody is examining all of the tzedakah that they're giving, because we know how important that is this time of the year, please consider the Spirit program. We are looking to make a lot of additions to the program in the course, but we need your help to do it. So please, as I said, give generously to the Spirit program. It's so appreciated. So we look forward to seeing you back after the Yom Tovim. I want to wish everybody a Gemar Chasima Tova. It should be a wonderful year for everybody. Good health and happiness with our families. And now we know how to speak to them because of Deborah. So thank you. Take care, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us.